If you would, take your Bibles with me this morning and turn to Mark chapter 4. We'll be looking there this morning as we continue looking at this good news of the gospel through the book of Mark. Wesley mentioned a road trip. I remember a road trip that I took several years ago. I got a phone call from my stepmother, and my father had passed away previously, and she asked me if I wanted his pop-up camper. And from my inheritance from my dad, I got a pop-up camper and a .22 rifle. It doesn't really shoot straight, but it was my dad's, and so it's good. But I said, yes, I would love to come get that pop-up camper. So right after camp was over, youth camp, we loaded up. Charles Walker was living with me at the time. He was in college, and we made this road trip. So my wife and my kids and Charles and head down to Denver to catch a ball game. We had this trip all the way planned out, and we get down to Denver to catch a Rockies Cubs game. And what always happens when I go watch the Cubs play, they lose to the Rockies, and that was to be expected. And we decide that we're going to leave and drive all through the night, and we're going to drive to my dad's house first, and we're going to go there, and then we're going to try to catch a Cubs game at Wrigley Field. They're playing, and so we had it all planned out. So we leave Denver, and we get into Kansas, and I'm tired, so I turn over driving to my wife, and she drove for about 2.5 minutes, maybe a little longer than that, and I was just falling asleep, and I hear this crash, and I said, what did we hit? She says, I don't know. And we pull over, and she had hit a deer and really messed up my truck. So we spent 48 hours of our road trip in Salina, Kansas, getting my truck fixed. So we didn't make it to Wrigley Field. I still owe Charles, I think, to this day, a Cubs game at Wrigley Field. I told him we'd make it up one day. We'll still do that sometime. And so we get the truck fixed finally after being in Kansas for 2 days, and we're leaving, and I'm trying to kind of figure out how to still make this trip work and get back in time. And as I'm making those decisions, I'm on the phone. I don't know if I was calling or doing something or whatever. And this car was in front of me driving too slow, and I go around it, and dawns on me that I just passed a police car going a little faster than I was supposed to be going. And so he pulls me over, and I give my sob story, and he lets me off without a ticket. Very, very grateful for that. And so we decide we're going to head to my dad's place first and pick up the camper, get there, have breakfast with my stepmom and my sisters, hook the camper up, and none of the lights work. And so now we got to fix the lights on the camper before we can head back. So a few hours later, well, she talked about not being mechanical. I'm not either, but we figured it out. And we got back on the road, and we're going to head down to Rebecca's parents a couple hours south and have dinner with them and come back. And we're not staying the night really anywhere. We're just getting there and back. And so I get off the highway in Indianapolis, and I come to this stoplight, and I stop. I'm emphasizing this. I stop, and I make a right-hand turn. There are about four or five police cars that a bunch of people pulled over, and this officer waves me down and makes me pull over, and he says, you didn't stop that stoplight. I explained to him in very stern words that, yes, I did stop for that stoplight, but he wrote me a ticket anyway. So I get this ticket on this trip and have dinner, and somehow made it the rest of the way back. Pretty uneventful. But get back to Wyoming. When I paid my ticket, I did write them a nice letter letting them know how unfair the ticket was. I don't think anybody cared or read it, but it made me feel a lot better that I actually wrote that letter. Life is like that. Journey. It's a journey of ups and downs. That trip had some really good things happen, and it had some not so good things happen. And life is that way. As we look at Mark's account here of it's Peter's account of Jesus' life, and this is perhaps one of my favorite gospel because it's action packed and it jumps from one event to the other. And I feel like my life does that. I feel like I spend my life just jumping from one event, from one thing to the other. As we look at today's passage here, let's set the stage. There is a crowd that is gathered listening to Jesus teach. And as he is teaching, there's so many people that he steps onto a boat, and he's teaching from the boat, and he's teaching these parables. And as he's teaching, there are other boats around, and there's people around. He's teaching everybody else in parables, but he's explaining to his disciples what these parables mean. And as he finishes this time of teaching, he turns to his disciples and said, hey, let's go ahead and just get in the boat. We're in a boat, and we're going to travel to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And as we look at this good news of the gospel, it's more than an invitation to come to Jesus for salvation. Jesus invited his disciples to journey with him. And Jesus is inviting us to journey with him, not just in this life, but through eternity. He's extending the invitation to us. And so let's pick this narrative up in Mark chapter 4 and gather some lessons that we can learn from this experience with Jesus and his disciples. In Mark 4, beginning in verse 35, we read, "On that day when evening came, he said to them, 'Let us go over to the other side.' Leaving the crowd, they took him along with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat, so much that the boat was already filling up. Jesus himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion, and they woke him and said to him, 'Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?' And he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Hush, be still.' And the wind died down, and it became perfectly calm. And he said to them, 'Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?' And they became very much afraid and said to one another, 'Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?'" So Jesus has just finished teaching, and it's getting late, and he extends this invitation to his disciples to travel to the other side with him. But it's more than just traveling in a boat. It's just more than a road trip, or as the kids said, we should call this a boat trip. It was more than just that. It was an invitation to spend time with Jesus. It was an invitation to spend time with Jesus in that boat. It was an invitation by Jesus to spend time with him on the other side of the sea. It was an invitation to get safely from this side to that side. It was an invitation to grow as they spent this time with Jesus. And for the disciples, there really wasn't much expectation as they went. This was a short journey, and one that they had done many times. It probably started off quietly enough. Jesus invited them to cross over to the other side of the lake, and they said, "Hey, other side of the lake, we've done this many, many, many times. What would be different about this time?" "Sure, Jesus, we'll get in the boat and we'll go." And they probably never gave it a second thought. Throughout Scripture, God extends the invitation for people to journey with him. Often in the Gospels, we see Jesus inviting people to come and be a part of life with him. Since Mark is Peter's account, throughout the sermon, we'll just kind of look at this journey that Peter went on with Jesus. Peter was on the seashore one time. He had just finished fishing, and Jesus came up and said, "Hey, go back in and we'll catch some more fish." I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version of this. And Peter does. He goes and he fishes. And Jesus, when he's done, says, "Come, follow me." And Peter says to Jesus, I'm not good enough to go follow you. I'm not good enough." And I understand Peter's perspective here, because I don't feel like I'm good enough to follow Jesus. I really struggled with that when I was in college, and I knew that God was calling me, and I said, "God, you don't understand who I am. I'm not good enough to follow you. I can't do this." And the truth was, and the truth is that I wasn't good enough, and the truth is that Peter wasn't good enough, and the truth is that none of you are good enough to follow Jesus. But being good enough is not a prerequisite for following Jesus. Jesus wants us to be obedient to him, to be willing to follow him, to allow him to lead us. And through that willingness and that obedience, God changed my life. And we see through the Gospels that through Peter's willingness to follow, that God changed his life. But it wasn't always easy for Peter. We see other people in the Gospels where Jesus said, "Follow," and they don't. We see the rich young ruler when Jesus says, "Come, follow me." And he says, Jesus said, "No, sell all you have, give to the poor." And this man of great wealth says, "I can't give up my stuff to come follow you." And sometimes when Jesus says, "Follow," there are reasons that we don't. Sometimes it's I'm not good enough. Sometimes it's, "Jesus, I'm not going to come follow you because I'm not willing to give up what I have to come follow you." I've visited with a person one time, and they told me that "I believe everything you say about the gospel. I know I need Jesus, but I'm having too much fun in my life right now. And when I quit having fun, then I'm going to give my life to Jesus. At some point in the future, I'm going to do that." To my knowledge, that person has never given their life to Jesus. Their fun, their stuff was way more important than Jesus was. Peter, he followed, not knowing where it was going to lead him, what was going to happen, but he followed. Here in this passage, Jesus says, "Let's go to the other side." And he's not just talking about the other side of the lake. The disciples are going to be crossing over to another side of understanding of who Jesus is. When this event is over, they're going to have a different picture of Jesus. This is going to be another side of faith as they grow in their faith with him. they're going to come to a deeper understanding of who he is, a deeper knowledge of who Jesus is. And in order for us to reach the other side, sometimes we have to go through some things in our life and some crises of faith in our lives so that we can get to that point of trust in him. We have to come to the grips of who Jesus is, his real identity, and respond to him if we are going to be with him. And that's the invitation. The invitation of the disciples was for them to be with him. Mark says they took him just as he was. And the picture is when the disciples got in this boat, they were the experienced boat people, right? Some of them were fishermen, and they took Jesus with them. That's what it started out, just as he was. They had this idea of who Jesus was, and they had this idea of who they were, and they get in the boat, and they begin to travel understanding this. But they're going to learn more about Jesus. Jesus wasn't going to change, but their understanding of Jesus, their perception of Jesus, is going to change drastically. Drastically. These fishermen, Peter especially, they got in the boat, they were in charge. Jesus was in the boat with them, but they were in charge. And Peter lived his life kind of that way. He was a take charge kind of guy. When Jesus says, "Who do people say that I am?" It was Peter that says, "You're the Christ. I'll tell you who you are. I'll tell you what people say." He gives the answers. The Transfiguration, we see in the Gospels, it was Peter that says, "Hey, let's build three altars." Peter that was there when Jesus was arrested and that pulled out his little sword and cut off Malchus's ear. This was Peter. This was Peter who became the leader of the early church in the first half of Acts. He was always in control. And if we're honest, we like to be people who are in control. We think we can handle things. And we'll just take Jesus along for the ride with us. You know, we'll add Jesus and we'll take him and we'll live our life and we'll just keep Jesus there as handy as long as we can have complete control. But then the storms come. And when the storms come, Jesus has to become more to us. In verse 37, "And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat, so much that the boat was already filling up. Jesus himself was in the stern asleep on the cushions, and they woke him and said to him, 'Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?' High winds come, the thunder begins to boom, lightning strikes, the waves are coming, the boat rocks violently, water coming over the sides." Peter, no stranger to storms. I'm sure this was not the first storm that he ever encountered on that lake, but this was different than the other storms. The other ones he handled just fine. This one, there was nothing he could do. And Peter had lots of storms in his life. As we leave this place here and as Peter follows Jesus, the storms don't quit. In Mark 1, we saw that Peter's mother-in-law was sick and in need of some healing. After the rest of Jesus, it was Peter that denied Jesus three times. It was Peter that even came to the point where he cursed out a young girl and says, "I don't even know him." In Acts, Peter spends time in jail arrested for his faith. According to church tradition, Peter was crucified upside down as a martyr for Christ. His life was going to continue to be filled with storms. And our lives are not without storms. A life with Jesus does not mean that the storms go away. Some of these storms will be storms of our own making. Some of these storms will not be of our own making. But living a life of obedience does not shield us from the storms of life. And these storms can cause us anxiety. These storms can cause us fear. They can cause us doubt. And we may not have the answers as we go through these times in our life, but we can know that we are never alone. In this passage, as they're going through the storm, Jesus is asleep in the boat. There's this crazy storm going on all around him. And here is Jesus, seemingly unconcerned, unafraid, sleeping in the midst of the storm. Remember, Jesus wasn't caught off guard. Jesus wasn't surprised there was a storm happening. He was just there. He knew about it. And he was one that is greater than the storm. And so because he's greater than the storm, he was sleeping, peaceful, and unafraid, waiting for the disciples to come and wake him up. And when they came and woke him up, they didn't just wake him up, they rebuked him. Right? We've ever done that? Rebuke Jesus? "Teacher, don't you even care? We're about to drown. We're perishing. Do you not care? How can you be sleeping? Don't you realize our lives are in danger? And we sometimes do the same thing. Sometimes when the storms of life come, we do that. We rebuke Jesus. We're so discouraged. God, do you not even care what I'm going through? Sometimes we wonder, Jesus, are you sleeping? Are you not even there? What are you doing? I don't feel your presence. And we question him and say, Jesus, do you even care? It might feel like during these times, these storms of life, that Jesus is asleep and he has forgotten all about you. But my friends, none of that is true. Jesus is there and he's always in control if we commit to follow him. And that's a commitment on our part. During Upward Basketball on Saturdays, we play a lot of basketball games. Between those games at halftimes, we have some testimonies that are shared. And yesterday, as Cheryl was sharing her testimony about this encounter she had with Jesus and how she made this decision to follow Jesus and how Jesus has walked with her through some storms of life, I was just impressed with the heart of her story. And I asked Cheryl if she would come this morning and share a little bit of that with us. And Cheryl, come and share.
So my name is Cheryl, which turns out to be an extremely minor detail, as this testimony is not about me. It's about the grace of the God that we serve. I was raised in church. I was actually raised in this church, as a matter of fact. Many of you can attest and testify that you helped raise me, right? and I was baptized when I was 7 years old with my brother Cody in this baptismal, there you go, right back here. I was raised to know Christ. I knew all the right words in Bible study, all the right answers, first to speak up, sometimes when I shouldn't have. I believed in Christ. I knew Christ. And yet, I started living what the world calls the best life. You hear it all the time if you have any social media. Living the best life. But the world's definition is not the same. So in high school, with cute boys and bad choices, like some of us can attest, I was living the best life. I was partying, drinking, lots of activities that I should not have been partaking in. And I knew that because I knew Christ, and I definitely brought him along. And at the peak of living my best life, came home high one night, called my mom a name I shouldn't have, the extreme disappointment across my father's face as he sent me to bed. Well, past my curfew because I did what I wanted, which was terrible. I now recognize that as a mom of three boys. I went to bed that night and I had a dream. And in our childhood home, there was this main living room that everybody would go to, and it had kind of a quiet feel to it, almost like a morning. And as I walked in the room, there was a presence. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I saw God, but I felt him. And it was an awesome feeling. And he took my dad, the head of our household, and it was kind of curious for me to see my father sit on this lap. And God said, Mal, child, I know you. Come home. And then he took my mom, Sam, and he said, Sam, I know you. Come home. And then he took my brother and he said, Cody, I know you, come home. And he looked at me and said, child, I don't know you. And he left. This kind of loneliness, this despair that I have never experienced again in my life. And I can't tell you the loneliness that I felt. And I'd like to tell you I woke up, but I didn't. I sat alone in this room for what felt like forever. And when I woke up, I said, Mom, I have to break up with this boyfriend. And she said, okay, sounds good. We've heard that before. You're 3 years in. See you at lunch, right? And I come home and I'm like, Mom, Dad, I did it. I broke up with him. They're like, great. Sounds good. And I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I then started to do all the things I was supposed to do. I, of course, was 17, still a lot of life ahead of me, a lot of temptations and choices to make. But you know what? From that point on, I decided I wanted to be known. And although we all falter, that should be our end goal, to be known. So last year, I was diagnosed with a rare disease. My newborn son, my youngest of three, turned 2 months old the day I landed in Rochester at the Mayo Clinic. Praise God for my mother, who's right there. If you don't know her, she's a saint. Stayed home with all three boys. But before we got there in the hospital, as my husband and I received this extremely stressful and scary diagnosis, the diagnosis of Ménétrier's disease with a prognosis of 10 to 15 years. While I know I have three small boys, that my oldest will be 15 at the time I pass away, if that were the case, I refuse to accept that. And I'm not going to tell you it wasn't stressful or scary. It is. Of course it is. We're human. But you know what? There was a peace. A peace that only comes from being known. A peace that only comes from being known by Christ. I want to tell you that I handled it all well. I didn't. I've cried. I still cry. I'm a hot mess. But thank God we're known, right? Thank God we have a Savior who controls it all, who controls what happens today, tomorrow, forever. And that's it.
As Cheryl said, we serve a God who is always in control. Always in control. Our God is trustworthy. In verse 39, it says, He got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Hush, be still." And the wind died down. It became very perfectly calm. And He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And they became very much afraid and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey Him?" There are storms in life. Peter continued to have storms in life. We have storms in life. But Jesus was there in the storms. Peter's mother-in-law was sick. Jesus was there and He healed the mother-in-law. When Peter denied Jesus three times and when Peter cursed out that young servant girl, it was Jesus that was there to restore him to a place of ministry. It was God who was there when Peter was in that prison cell because of his faith that was there and released him. When Peter was executed upside down on a cross for his faith, it was Jesus who was there to receive him into eternity with him. No matter the outcome, Jesus can be trusted. In our lives, He can be trusted. He's there in our victories and He's there in our defeats. He's there in sickness. He is there in health. He is there in good times. He is there in bad times. The storms are going to come. But for the believer, the Jesus is there in the storm. He will be there every single day. And there is no storm that we will face that He is not there with us. And even in the end, in the final storm, if our life comes to an end because of something that happens here, we are in the presence of Jesus and the storm will be calmed, never to have a storm again. In the meantime, we need to choose. Do we trust Him or blame Him? Do we grow in a relationship with Him through the storms, or do we run away from Him in the times of storm? Do these storms of life strengthen our faith, or do we lose our faith? Jesus asked His disciples, He says, ask them two questions. Why are you afraid? And why is it that you have no faith? And I know in my life, I can picture Jesus asking me these same questions. He is worthy of our faith, and these can't go together. Fear and faith do not coexist. We need to have a faith that drives out fear in our lives. And disciples, they asked, they said, "Who is this that even the wind and the sea obey Him?" They had not yet fully come to a place they understood the power of Jesus. And there are many of us today who do not understand the power of Jesus. Up to this point in Jesus' ministry, even with His disciples, people were amazed at His miracles, but they weren't afraid. They thought, man, isn't it wonderful that God sent this really nice man who does these miracles and heals some people and offers some forgiveness. But now they encounter a man who speaks and the wind and the waves obey Him. And they thought they had Jesus all figured out. They took Jesus along with them in the boat, and suddenly they discovered they're in a boat with this person that is far greater than they ever even imagined. And they asked the question, who is this? I find it interesting that if you read the first part of Mark, people say, what is this? You know, what is this new kind of teaching? What is this miracle that he's doing? And now they encounter him and they say, who is this? And this is an important question that we need to answer in our life. Who is Jesus Christ? Who is this man? Like the disciples, we may think that we have him all figured out. And we may be people who do this. We take Jesus along and we'll put Jesus in a little box and we'll put him on a shelf. And we're good to have Jesus with us. And whenever we need him, we'll just take him down off the shelf and we'll open the box and say, Jesus, I need you right now. When I'm done with you, I'll put you back in a box and I'll stick you back on a shelf. And Jesus, I'll come back and get a hold of you later when I need you. Sometimes we treat Jesus that way. Sometimes we want Jesus to be in the boat with us as long as he's happily sleeping and not interfering with our life, we are good. You may even call ourselves a Christian, but we haven't come to this term of who Jesus was. And what happens is that we have these crises of faith, and it really, at that time, shows in our life who this Jesus is to us. See, Jesus isn't a fairy tale figure. Jesus isn't just some good teacher or a nice man. Jesus is the eternal Son of God who created you and me, and he lays absolute claim on our lives. He is the King of kings. Jesus is the Lord of lords. He is a judge of all mankind. When Christ returns, the Bible tells us that there'll be those that know him that will go with him into eternity, and there'll be those who do not know him, and they're going to be terrified as they are said, depart from me. I don't even know who you are. As we look at this gospel of Jesus, this is a gospel about Jesus. This gospel is Jesus. We are invited to journey with him and to not be afraid. As Shira was sharing her story, there was a time in her life when she had Jesus in a little box and she lived her life. And it came a point in her life when Jesus became real to her. And she said, even though she continued to struggle in life and made good decisions and bad decisions, there was a change in the relationship. And then when she gets news that the doctors say, you may not have long to live. You may not see your children grow up. As scary as the news was, there's no fear because she knows that Jesus is in control. And we can know that he is always in control. The storms will come, the difficulties will come, and we can face life and death unafraid. So this morning, will you respond to the good news of the gospel?